Today you will hear from two speakers, Dave Robbins, the North Atlantic Coast Comprehensive Study Project Manager, who will cover some brief background and review slides, and Jason Engel, the study's climate change and sea level rise lead, who will cover the primary topic for today's webinar. As Colin said, we will have a question and answer period following the presentation. However, feel free to enter questions in the notes box, sending to all presenters, as Colin noted, at any time during the presentation. We will remind you again how to ask a question or make a comment right before the Q&A period begins. A final note is that the slides from today's webinar are available or should be available shortly on the North Atlantic Coast Comprehensive Study webpage at www.nad.usace.army.mil/compstudy. The recording from today's webinar will also be posted to the webpage once available. So with that, I will turn it over to Dave Robbins to kick off today's presentation with a very brief overview of the study.
Thank you, Carla, and thank you all for participating today. Again, this is the fourth installment of our draft analysis, North Atlantic Coast Comprehensive Study Draft Analyses topic-specific webinar series. Today, before we get to Jason's presentation on today's topic, which is sea level rise and climate change adaptation planning, just want to cover a few items in case those who have not been able to participate in previous webinars understand it and provide a little bit of context. Again, we're here today because Hurricane Sandy occurred in October of 2012, and the disaster that resulted prompted Congress to pass the Disaster Relief Appropriations Act, which provided the authorization and appropriations for the Corps of Engineers to conduct the comprehensive study. And the authorization includes that we will conduct a comprehensive study to address the flood risk of vulnerable coastal populations in areas that were affected by Hurricane Sandy. The goals of this study are to provide a risk reduction framework consistent with the Corps of Engineers and NOAA rebuilding principles that were developed concurrently following the Hurricane Sandy event in early 2013. Additionally, we want to be able to present some information to support resilient coastal communities and robust sustainable coastal landscape systems, which will be consistent, which will consider future sea level rise and climate change scenarios, reduced risk of vulnerable coastal populations, property, ecosystems, and infrastructure. The Corps of Engineers team is an enterprise team comprised of engineers and scientists from across the North Atlantic Division and other organizations within the Corps of Engineers. The primary products associated with the comprehensive study is a coastal storm risk management framework, which was conducted at a regional scale and collaborative in nature, which is a part of today's webinar and coordination with many of you today. As part of this coastal storm risk management framework, we'll present opportunities to address flood risk by region and state. Included in that would be the identification of a range of potential solutions and parametric unit cost estimates by the region and state. Again, we'll look to identify activities warranting additional analysis as well as institutional barriers. Just a reminder that the framework itself is not a decision document from a typical Corps of Engineers perspective. It does not include any NEPA document and will not result in project-specific recommendations. With that, I'll pass the webinar now over to Jason Engel to continue the discussion.
Thank you, David. My name is Jason Engel. I'm the chief of the Coastal Design Section and a coastal engineer in Jacksonville, Florida. For the last several years, I've been working on guidance updates for the Army Corps of Engineers as it pertains to climate change and sea level rise. And so I've been added to the North Atlantic Coast Comprehensive Study as the lead, so I will say that there have been quite a few engineers and scientists involved in various aspects of climate change on the project. Next slide. A little bit of background. Most will be familiar with the IPCC prediction of accelerated sea level rise and global mean sea levels. This is climate-driven global mean sea level change scenarios have been developed by the Army Corps of Engineers and NOAA. The references are at the bottom. These scenarios are suitable for use in assessing the future impacts of sea level change on the natural environment and human infrastructure. And these are the scenarios that were applied to the North Atlantic Coast Comprehensive Study. So there are five basic tasks that the work has fallen into. The first was to evaluate these scenarios for long-term gauge locations across the North Atlantic. There was GIS mapping of those sea level rise scenarios for the 50 and 100-year time frames. Also, a statistical analysis was done for historical extreme water levels. That work is actually feeding mainly into the numerical modeling of storms, which is ongoing. And then finally, part of the ongoing work that I'm engaged in right now is the climate change adaptation methods and example. Next slide. So first, a few words about sea level change, the global versus local, for those who may not be familiar. During the 20th century, about 1.7 millimeters per year of global mean sea level rise has been observed. But the sea levels are influenced by decadal scale, climate, and oceanographic patterns that are not associated with long-term sea level rise. And for this reason, relative sea level change for any given location relies primarily on long-term water level records. Greater than 30 years is considered sufficient to remove the non-global mean sea level associated fluctuations. Additionally, these gauges capture local and regional land uplift or subsidence, which obviously contribute to the relative local mean sea level change. Next slide. So the relative sea level change is the sum of the global mean sea level change in any local vertical land movement. The relative local sea level change is what's required to assess impacts at any specific site. As I said, these are measured by local water level gauges directly. There are 35 within the Virginia to Maine study area. And the link at the bottom here is a site that anyone can visit and compute the same curves with the same water level measurements that were used for this study. Next slide. This is just an example from New Jersey of the four curves that are being used in the comp study. Again, the references are above. The Army Corps of Engineers guidance was recently updated, but the curves are the same ones that have been used since 2012, so maybe familiar to a lot of the users. And the NOAA, excellent, actually. The NOAA climate assessment document's a very worthwhile read if you want to bring yourself up to speed on the climate change considerations from NOAA's viewpoint. They have scenarios in that document, and we're utilizing their highest one, which is actually slightly higher than the Army Corps of Engineers' high estimate. So we wanted to include the NOAA estimate in order to get the full range of possible future sea levels. Next slide. One of the products coming out of the comp study are these maps, and they're intended to give a qualitative sense of future sea level change impacts. These will be found in the state appendices at this type of scale. What you see in the upper right are the curves that I've just described and the vertical line showing the year 2068, and this represents the initial assessment started at the year 2018, representing the first sort of action or construction that might come following the comp study. So we chose a 50-year and a 100-year epoch, the first one ending in 2068 and the second one in 2118. So this map indicates the inundation, the potential for inundation in the year 2068 for each of the four water levels. They're coded by color, the light green being the Army Corps of Engineers low, the next darker shade of blue being the intermediate, the dark blue being the high, and red being the NOAA highest. Next slide. This is the same information. Only for 100 years out, that is the year 2118. You can see the obvious change. The curves being nonlinear actually, you know, produce quite a bit more significant impact in these out years. It's notable that particularly the NOAA curve, extending it past the year 2100 is really stretching the limits of that of the curves a bit. But we were given the charge to look out that far, so we have these 100-year maps. Next slide. So I wanted to discuss a little bit about the sea level change scenario evaluation. The Sea Storm system is an Army Corps of Engineers Research and Development Lab system, which is storm surge and wave modeling for plausible storm events. The product is a plausible storm suite that contains hydrographs of tropical storm waves and water levels throughout the North Atlantic. The storm database with sea level rise and sea level change will be publicly available following its completion in January 2015. And this is a work in progress. This work was covered in detail in the modeling workshops that have been held in webinars. I'm not going to cover it in much detail today, but there's a substantial amount of information available in the future and on our website at this time and in the future when the work is completely completed. Next slide. One of the topics that I wanted to cover today was the topic of climate change adaptation. You know, the goal of climate change adaptation is to minimize impacts from climate change and maximize the resiliency of the coastal landscape. With the COMP study having greater than 30,000 miles of shoreline to cover, you know, we were not able to tackle specific climate change adaptation plans for the entire area, obviously. These plans are complicated. They involve a series of decisions at federal, state, local, and municipality levels. They involve sometimes high levels of uncertainty, and a lot of decisions have to be made. So we're not here to talk about how the COMP study has studied all of this, but to lay out a framework in which communities can take some of the information that's generated from the COMP study and generate climate change adaptation plans of their own. And just a word about resilience. There are many different definitions out there, but this one is a pretty good working definition. The ability to anticipate, prepare for, respond to, and adapt to changing conditions, and to withstand and recover rapidly from disruptions with minimal damage. So obviously, the experience of Hurricane Sandy was a study in communities that were able to bounce back rapidly and others that were not. And there were fundamental reasons for those. So the climate change adaptation, part of that is to look at the causes for ways to enhance resilience. Next slide. The key concepts then really to consider in terms of climate change adaptation planning is climate change means that natural forces in the future are not going to necessarily resemble the forces from the past. This puts things like Army Corps of Engineers studies into a unique position because normally the way that coastal engineers and scientists have formulated projects and evaluated risks was that the future would be more or less a continuation of the past. But with climate change and sea level change in particular, it's notable that this brings a greater level of uncertainty into it. And the uncertainty exists not only with regard to the sea level change and other climate changes, but also in terms of the response of the landscape and the people. So morphological changes, ecological changes, socioeconomic adjustments. This requires a scenario-based approach for climate change adaptation. So the scenarios shown earlier, the sea level change curves, for instance, are used to generate scenarios of what the future could look like, because there is indeed more than one possible future. The point is that the critical climate change thresholds have to be evaluated. So if you were going to look at climate change adaptation in terms of critical water level thresholds, then you would evaluate your area and look at perhaps 1 foot or 2 feet becomes a point at which flooding becomes much more frequent, for instance. Perhaps the coastal defense that's characteristic for the site is only adequate through a certain amount of sea level rise, and then you see much more frequent or severe flooding. those types of thresholds are the planning thresholds that we envision being part of climate change adaptation planning. One concept that I'd like to point out that's been used in Europe and the UK is the concept of low regret. Adaptation measures that have an immediate benefit as well as a future benefit. And in many of the nature-based features like dunes or marshes can enhance the environment and make a very adaptable platform for future changes to the system. For instance, as sea levels rise, if a marsh has been constructed and maintained, one might be able to add vertically to it in order to sustain it through sea level rise. Next slide. So ultimately, the products from the climate change adaptation process will be an overview of the scenario-based adaptation planning approach that I've outlined here, and then the development of an example adaptation plan. And this is something that we're actively working on right now. It'll involve a typical bay or barrier island shoreline. That is a low-lying area, very typical of interior shorelines, the backside of barrier islands, and even the front side of some barrier islands. This will involve relative sea level change and extreme water level forcing and the changes that can occur. Taking a look at the future without action condition of this site, flooding frequency and erosion. And then a look at the potential measures and adaptation plans, adaptation measures that can be taken. The idea being to arrive at a process where we've laid out an example of a climate change adaptation plan for a site that's rather representative of many of the coastlines for the North Atlantic. Next slide. So again, I just wanted to talk a little bit today. So far, what's been completed is an evaluation of the scenarios that I've shown you, GIS mapping that's available to be seen in the state appendices, a statistical analysis of the historical extreme water levels that's being used to feed into and validate the numerical modeling of the storms that's being done with the sea storm system. And then ultimately what's going on right now with much of the team is this climate change adaptation methods and example. That's what I have today. I'm here to field questions, and I think I'll turn it back over to Dave.
Right. Thank you, Jason. Next slide here is just, again, the follow-up from where we are as far as the comp study is concerned and what happens next. I recall at this point in time the comp study team is seeking input from our interagency stakeholders to be considered for integration into the North Atlantic Coast Comprehensive Study report documentation. This will occur through mid-April this month. We're looking at a close of the comment period next Monday, the 14th. At that point in time, we'll be considering the information that we receive from our interagency stakeholders and as well as continue ongoing work, some of the work that Jason referenced, to integrate into and ultimately develop our draft report, which would lead to, by the end of May, and leading into report for review by June, the end of June this year. And at that point in time, we'll begin internal reviews leading to the delivery of the report to Congress by January 2015. And so at this point in time, again, the information is available electronically. We distributed the files to our distribution list of interagency stakeholders. You should receive this information. And again, there's a comment form included in the distribution email for you to provide your comments based on a few guide questions that are included on the comment form. Again, as far as the subject-specific webinar is concerned, we held four subject-specific webinars. Those, as Carla mentioned earlier during the call, that these slides and recordings will be available on the Comp Study website. And just a reminder that all feedback forms will be due by next Monday, the 14th. And again, if there's any other remaining technical challenges with accessing the documents or any other general issues for further coordination, you can contact me with my contact information here via email to be sure that we can get you the information that you need. So at this point in time, I'll pass it back to Carla.
Thank you, Jason and Dave, for your presentations. At this time, we will begin our question and answer period. So I'd like to remind you all that if you wish to ask a question or provide a comment, please enter it in the notes box sending to all presenters, or dial *1 on your phone to be placed in the queue to ask your question verbally. And there's also a raise hand button on the top of your screen, which will also place you in the queue if you'd like to ask your question verbally over the phone. So with that, I believe we do have a comment and a question in the chat box and the notes box. Excuse me. And the first is Alan Springett says that this presentation states AdSerc Swan, while earlier presentations stated AdSerc SG Wave.
Right, and that needs to be corrected. The commenter is correct. What we are using is AdSerc and SG Wave, not Swan.
Great. Thank you for the clarification, Jason. And then our next question is from Ruby Rosbanchi. I'm sorry if I botched that. But are you using local climate projections like New York City Panel on Climate Change or FEMA Preliminary Work Maps or Advisory Maps in Sandy?
I'll answer the first part of the question, that we're not using the local climate projections that some areas have, because we wanted to consider a consistent set of climate scenarios across the entire comp study area, and only a select few, like the New York City Panel on Climate Change, have their own. So we wanted to consider a consistent set for the mapping and all of the other modeling and other uses for the sea level change scenarios, so we did not consider those. Now, in terms of the FEMA preliminary work maps or advisory maps, David, did you want to answer that maybe?
Yes, I'll answer that. Thanks, Jason. For the FEMA data that we've acquired as part of our data collection, again, we utilized the FEMA D firms and then supplemented those FEMA D firms with the preliminary firms as that information is available electronically to incorporate into our GIS spatial geodatabase.
Great. Thanks, Jason and Dave. At this time, those are the only questions and comments we have received. So we'll give it a few minutes. Colin, can you just reiterate the instructions one final time for folks?
Yep, definitely. If you'd like to ask a question over the phone lines, you can do so by pressing *1 on your telephone handset. You'll be notified once your line is unmuted. And if you have connected via VoiceOver IP, you can use the raise hand button in the top left-hand corner of your screen. Also, you can still type in questions via the notes tab, and we ask that you send your questions to presenters.
Sorry. This is Jason. One comment that I would make to those on the call is that very soon there will be some important guidance updates coming from the Army Corps of Engineers, and much of the climate change adaptation that I just covered very briefly here is covered in quite a bit of detail in this document. The title of it is Procedures to Evaluate Sea Level Change, Impacts, Responses, and Adaptation. This is not quite on the street yet, but it's what we've been working on for several years, and it gives a much more in-depth look at the concepts behind scenario planning, climate change adaptation. So what we'll do is, when this document is finalized, we'll make sure that we put a link to it on the North Atlantic Coast Comprehensive Study webpage. Similarly, once our research and development lab publishes the work looking at analysis of all of the extreme water level gauges, we'll also publish a link to that on the web page. So although I can't cover all this information in a great deal of detail on this call, I think that quite a bit of useful information will be available very soon that'll shed quite a bit more light on the details behind what I've spoken about.
Great. Thank you, Jason. At this time, we still do not have any further comments or questions, so we'll give it maybe another 30 seconds just to let folks chime in if there are any questions or comments. If not, we encourage you to certainly visit our website for more information, as well as presentations and recordings of all of these webinars. If you have any technical issues with your report review, you can contact Dave Robbins. His contact information is on the screen. And we did actually just get one question in the chat box from Malcolm Balding. What level of coordination is going on with FEMA related to FirmNet?
David, did you want to discuss that?
Right, with FEMA FirmNet, again, as I mentioned previously, again, we're working with the effective data that we have available through the DFIRMs, and we supplemented that information with preliminary mapping once that's available electronically.
Great, thanks, Dave. Okay, so with that, I don't see anything further. So as I was saying before, feel free to check out our website. Contact Dave if you have any technical issues with the report review. And thank you very much for your participation today. And if you've participated in our other webinars, we do appreciate your interest and participation. So with that, we will sign off. And thank you all again for your participation.